Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Got my mojo working, but just don't work on you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about more information on garlic, how it can help prevent artery calcification and infection, and how nut consumption, all types of nuts, are associated with reduced risk of some types of cancer, and how they have found the longevity hormone, but it's much lower in stressed and depressed women, and a lot more on health and healing. And then two reports on the water crisis, one around the world from the University of California at Irvine. A third of the world's biggest groundwater basins are going empty. And a report from Mike Adams in Natural News. And this is rather prophetic. Wow, has the last week been prophetic on so many levels. An article that he has just finished, California property values collapse as water shutoffs begin. Wealthy community go dry in days. Real estate implosion now inevitable. I've been warning about that. And our special guest today, a continuation of our conversations with remarkable minds, Professor Henry Giroux, The Violence of Organized Forgetting and America's Disimagination Machine. I think you're going to find this stimulating. Also, our sister station, WBAI, where I've been on the air for 39 years, was off the air for about 47 minutes today. It was just incidental to the fact that Guns and Butter's Bonnie Faulkner was interviewing Dr. Suzanne Humphreys on the very topic that I was discussing with her, but was banned on free speech radio that is no longer free speech. It's fascist speech up at KPFA in Berkeley. In any case, that interview no one could hear. So what I'm going to do is I'll be inviting Dr. Susanna Humphreys to come on next week to discuss the information that we missed. I was sitting there writing and listening dead air. Now, that's one more reason why. Two things. One, in our new offices, which should be open in about 2 weeks, I have built a state-of-the-art studio as a backup emergency studio, meaning ISDN, Comrex, 10 phone lines. And so if there ever in the future is a longer down time for the station, WBAI, at least if they choose, they'll have an emergency station that is fully equipped that they could use 24/7 and hence be able to continue broadcasting. So that at least is there for them. Separately, if that were noon and you couldn't hear it, and if you were listening over WBAI in New York, you could always call the telephone number, because I originate all of our programming from our master studios at Progressive Radio Network. And here's that number. So any telephone in America, you can call and listen live at noon Eastern time. No matter what happens to the local station, you can hear it. Or the internet, you can still hear it. Write it down now. 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. Now let's go to some of the more important issues. One is we want to protect people's hearts. We want to protect their arteries. We want them to live a longer life. This is from Dr. Jeffrey Dash, medical doctor. Quote, aged garlic shows promising effects on reducing elevated coronary calcium scores while also acting as a gut-friendly antimicrobial. And we know, by the way, that when you have elevated coronary calcium, that's really bad because that indicates a real high probability of a heart attack. And therefore, getting your calcium in your arteries down is important. Well, then you have to look at what this new study showed with garlic helps do exactly that. And this was in a placebo-controlled group. So those that took the garlic every day, after a year of treatment, quote, the aged garlic group had significantly less coronary artery calcification compared to the placebo group. So, live a longer life by taking garlic. And you already know all the things I say garlic does, but also add to that, it is a very powerful antimicrobial. It kills bad bacteria everywhere in your body, and we need that. So, take your garlic every day. Now, I'm a big believer in nuts. I'm not talking about the deep-fried, heavily salted, trans-fat-laden nuts that you buy in your vending machines or you get on airplanes. I'm talking about organic nuts such as walnuts, almonds, pistachios, macadamia, cashews, peanuts, pine nuts, as well as seeds in addition, sunflower, safflower, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, chia seeds. Those are all very important. This is from the Mayo Clinic. I'll quote verbatim. This was published in Nutrition Review. Cancer and type 2 diabetes are two of the most significant public health burdens facing the world today, and currently available data suggests their prevalence is expected to continue to increase. Nut consumption has long been hypothesized to have a role in preventing both those diseases, but until now, evidence has been inconsistent. A new systematic review and meta-analysis, that means looking at many studies, published Nutrition Reviews this week, shows that nut consumption is indeed associated with a decreased risk of certain types of cancers. And so that's important. They studied 30,000 patients on the disease prevention powers of nut consumption to create this analysis, and they found that the nuts made a difference. So here's the takeaway message. There are many ways you can eat nuts, and they're all good. But if you want to get the maximum benefit, then get an organic, sprouted, raw nut butter. That is your best way, and that's the most nutritious. My entire adult career was spent, and is being spent, on studying how we age and trying to slow it down, wherever possible, repair any damage that's been done from lifestyle, from drinking, smoking, drugs, bad food, caffeine, alcohol, environmental pollutants and stressors, and genetic defects. And I've published a lot of studies on this. I've done over 43 lifestyle and behavior modification studies with over 30,000 people and presented this before scientific bodies. And everyone's looking for that magic cell. Well, we know that there's certain nutrients like grapeseed extract, resveratrol, also from grapes, grape skin, and, of course, carnosine. All of those are known to slow down the telomere, and that means the longer your telomeres keep from dividing, the longer you live. Now, stress really accelerates the aging process, and I cannot tell you enough that the more stressed you are, the more insecure you are, the more frightened you are, the more fearful, even if you're able to control it in your day-to-day activities. So nobody really knows what's going on at the emotional level, but if you're bearing that burden, you're prematurely aging yourself. You could be knocking 10, 15 years off your lifespan. This is from the University of California at San Francisco. I'll quote it verbatim. Women under chronic stress have significantly low levels of Clotho, a hormone that regulates aging and enhances cognition. Researchers at University of San Francisco have found in a study comparing mothers of children on the autism spectrum to low-stress controls. The researchers found that, this is what's important, the women in their study with clinically significant depressive symptoms had even lower levels of Clotho in their blood than those who were under stress but not experiencing such symptoms. The study was published today in Translational Psychiatry, and is the first to show a relationship between psychological influences of Clotho, which performs a wide variety of functions in the body, Quote, our findings suggest that Clotho, which we know now is very important to health, could be a link between chronic stress and premature diseases and death. So, okay, what can we make of this scientific study that doesn't seem to be reported? I checked the internet this morning anywhere. It means this, that when you're stressed, not just an acute stress, something happens and, okay, it wasn't good, but you get over it. A day or two or a week, and it's past you. We're talking about chronic stress. Think of the things today that can cause chronic stress. Not being able to pay our bills. Not being able to have a retirement. Coming out of retirement. Many, many older people are coming out of retirement and have to work at menial jobs. Not being able to afford your apartment or a home. Think of all the people in California now who haven't been paying attention, or if they have, they haven't been proactive with the information. Oh, it'll pass. It can't be that bad. You know, there's just too many of us. There's too much money. There's too much success. Silicon Valley, Hollywood. It isn't going to happen. Well, it has. I will say this officially. As of today, you are a dollar short and a day late. It's happened. The market is collapsing. And now, it's how much are you going to lose to get out of it? Now, for those of you who are not, and not everyone's affected, the very wealthy are not affected. They live by a separate set of rules. They can afford to pay water fines. They can afford to dig their own wells over up in Napa Valley. But for the average person and those in gated communities, man, oh man, that gated community became a complex that when there was no water to support all that green, turns it into a desert. And people didn't move there to be in a desert. They moved there to be in green, lawns, tennis, golf, you know, beautiful ponds, sprouting water. It's over. So now they got stress. Get all these people who have diseases, stress. You've got a society that does not hold those in power accountable, stress. So that stress then impacts our hormones. The hormones then impact our aging, which speeds it up. So the more stressed you are, the more depressed you are, the quicker you die, the faster your aging process. So how do we deal with it? Well, we can't change all the circumstances in our life. That's simply not possible. But we can get out of harm's way. Look at all the wonderful places in this world you could live, where there's progressive people, abundant resources. In fact, about 60% of America has everything for everyone, and there's no need to panic there. It's just that we don't want to move. We want change, but we don't want to change. Well, now you got to. And if you're stressed, you're just speeding up your aging process. That's what this said. Now, this is from University of California at Irvine. Quote, reserves likely far smaller than previously thought. A third of the world's biggest groundwater basins are in distress. Two new studies led by University of California, Irvine, using data from NASA Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment satellites, show that civilization is rapidly draining some of its largest groundwater basins. Yet there is little to no accurate data about how much water remains in them. The result is that significant segments of the Earth's population are consuming groundwater quickly without knowing when it might run out. And this was published today in Water Resources Research. I've been explaining to this audience for a long time, move to where there's water, good soil, good climate, good people. Because sooner or later, you'll be forced to. This is from Mike Adams just about an hour ago. Quote, California property values collapse as water shutoffs begin. Wealthy community go dry in days. Real estate implosion now inevitable. Water shutoffs have now begun in California, where government-ordered restrictions are starting to leave large communities high and dry. As CBS News is now reporting, the Mountain House community of 15,000 residents will run out of water in just a matter of days. Quote, the community's sole source of water, the Byron Bethany Irrigation District, was one of 114 senior water rights holders cut off by a curtailment notice from the state on Friday, reports CBS News. And just like that, the property values of millions of dollars worth of homes belonging to 15,000 residents nosedives towards zero. After all, what's the value of a home that has no running water? California isn't Africa yet, so the idea of carrying your own buckets of water for bathing isn't widely accepted. Now, quote, this is what was said on May 7th. How many California homes and businesses are headed for zero water future? Many millions. How many Californians are aware of all this and are already have their homes on the market so they can move somewhere else? A very small number. A tiny fraction of the total number of homes and property owners invested there. What these people are unfortunately not yet seeing is the catastrophic consequences of a continued drought and how it can utterly destroy the value of property. Now, I mentioned just 7 months ago what happens when the water runs out. I said the following, quote, plunging property tax revenues. After all, the value of the state's budget is based upon the value of your property. So when your property keeps going up because more people want to live in a given area than there is property, and developers exploit this, you pay higher property taxes. That in turn means the state, local communities have money from which to provide resources. You're going to have multiple bankruptcies, a wave of climate refugees fleeing California, and the collapse of the California economy. Unless rain starts falling out of the sky, all this is going to start unraveling like clockwork. From CBS News, quote, a number of water districts plan to sue the state on the grounds that the State Water Resources Control Board has no legal authority to call off some of California's oldest, most protected water rights. End quote. That's from CBS News. And so the water wars begin. There's not enough water to go around. And you're going to have the entire real estate market in California collapse. Let me go on the record now. I predict that within the next 24 months, California's entire real estate market will be in free fall. Now, for a lot of people, they won't know what to do, where to go, or have the resources to do it. For those who put their entire life savings into their real estate, you're going to see that substantially reduced. It's already happening. Let me give you one example. This is from the Washington Post yesterday. Quote, Rancho Santa Fe resident Randy Woods was feeling burdened by his lush landscape and opted to downsize. The drought had dampened demand for large estates in San Diego County. Woods said his girlfriend is among those struggling to sell. Her home boasts a yard designed by Kate Sessions, a well-known landscape architect and botanist who died in 1940. But now the rare palm tree specimens, the secret garden, and the turret-shaped hedges are a liability rather than a selling point. Another friend, Wood said, has seen the value of his 9-acre plot plummet from $30 million to $22 million. Did you read that correctly? A multi-million-dollar estate has lost over 25% of its value virtually overnight due to the issue of water. And this collapse in property prices is for properties that still have running water. What happens when the property supply of the water supply is a $30 million estate is cut off? The value collapses to almost nothing. Who wants to live in a $30 million mansion and pay seven figures of property tax each year to the same California government cuts off your water supply? Who wants to live like a third world refugee in a $30 million estate? Nobody in their right mind, it turns out, not even in California. So we're going to see this escalating. At the same time, you will see those who try to downsize it say, no, we'll get desalinization. Well, desalinization is an environmental nightmare, and I will deal with that on an upcoming show. So we're living in Delusionville, and I suggest for those who listen to this program, move. Get out of California. California is no longer viable unless you're very rich or have an estate in the northern part and have your own water supply. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us.
Your love lifting me
like to welcome all of you. Just a couple of announcements. We're going to go to our, we're going to go to something I think we need to hear from a man who had a lot to say. Let's see who in this audience can recognize his name. If you know what his name is, call us at 888-874-4888 and tell me when you think he said this. We're going to hear about revolution, humanity, it's time to rise through collective evolution.
We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised.
Americans, mobilize. Stand together, stand tall. Tell the government you're mad as hell. No longer cooperate with the government. Do not accept the national ID card. Do everything in your power to restore freedom and your individuality back to America. Stop being a country run by the institutions for the institutions. Let's go back to we the people, by the people, for the people, as opposed to we the institution, by the institution, for the institution.
Stop being scared. We have to stand up and do what's necessary to take back, to stop these bankers, these elite, this government full of lies, congressmen full of liars.
As Iraq veterans against the war, we are resisting an occupation we once risked our lives for. We swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, but we found out the hard way that the greatest enemies of the Constitution are not to be found in the sands of some far-off land, but rather right here at home. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance. They cannot stop us. Humanity marches on. The utmost manifestation of love and devotion to America is today, as it always has been, resistance of tyranny. Resist we must, and resist we will. We will not be silent. We will not obey. We will not let our government destroy our humanity. We will not wait another moment in fear to stand up for what we know to be right. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance.
Northwoods, explain that really quick. I mean,
this is 1962. The Joint Chiefs of Staff signed a document that was planning on having fake attacks on American civilians and blaming it on the Cubans to get us to go to war with Cuba. Blow up a drone jetliner. They're going to send a jet into the air and blow it up.
Oh my God.
Blame the Cubans for it and get us to go to war with Cuba. Planning on having fake attacks on American civilians.
The time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine won't be prevented from working at all.
I served with Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines, as an automatic machine gunner. There's a term, once a Marine, always a Marine. But there's also the term, eat the apple, F the core. I don't work for you no more.
And I'm a Marine. I took an oath to defend the Constitution. The Constitution! I didn't take an oath to defend these banksters. And I guarantee you, all you devil dogs out there need to rise up and take over this country and defend the Constitution against these bones. Okay, I'm sick of it too, Alex. You know, I'm a Marine, but I'm sick of this. You know, they're using us and they're sucking us dry and they are destroying us.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Councils of government.
we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
And those are some voices that should be heard. You had two presidents of the United States, John F. Kennedy, Dwight Eisenhower. And now all we have are voices supporting war. We have the Democratic Party, a complete corrupt autocratic machine run by the Clintons and Obamas and all their backers on Wall Street. We the people, remember, you still have third party, and that's the only ones to have any legitimacy at this moment. And we're going to keep addressing the issues, the social issues, with documentaries, investigative reports, and the culpability of the average person to get up out of their chair and do something constructive to acknowledge that we the people still count. Now, we're going to go in 10 minutes to my guest. But before we go there, I got an email this morning from Berthold Reimers, our station manager, who said, would I do something to help the station raise money because they had a disastrous fundraiser we just finished, and it was an extended one at that, and they didn't get even half the money they needed to pay the bills, so right now they're having a hard time paying any bills. Well, I said, I'll do something. So here's what we're doing. As of today, I said, don't go back to fundraising every day because you're just going to lose audience. I'm already committed to doing a two-week retreat with a different group in August, but I can open that up to some of the BAI listeners, and that way send me BAI's bills and I'll pay them because that's the only way they're going to get paid. And by the way, that's what happened earlier this year, right? Paid BAI's bills, paid for, I think, over 1,000 premiums to help the station out. I'm willing to do it again. We're starting tonight. There's no more room tonight, by the way, for our premiere. We've been sold out. But I do set some seats aside for WBI staff, producers, and management. If you'd like to come to the world premiere tonight of Saving the Planet, one bite at a time, you can call. You must call within the hour, because if not, then I have a backup list of people who do want to come. Also, I realize there are some people in this audience who are so financially strapped, even homeless, that $5 is too much money. So I've set aside a certain number of seats for those who are homeless or completely destitute financially, so you could come for free as my guest. And you can sit anywhere you want in the theater, and you'll get a video also, so no one will know that you don't have any money. You have to call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. And this film that you're going to see this evening at 6 o'clock, this, I hope, come the fall, will be a major catalyst for having an enormous group of young teenagers that we're working with now lead a march to protect the environment and taking on one specific issue. And I will not go into it now. You'll hear about it later on. But I'm expecting several million people to join in this worldwide. So behind the scenes, we are making our moves and under the radar to help do something positive about the environment and human health. And this film will be a catalyst for that. It'll be the catalyst. So a lot of good stuff is happening in spite of all that's bad, all the problems. Now, one other thing I can do, I don't have a whole lot of room left because it's almost full. I think we have room for 10 people, but still, that's money to the station. So if you'd like to take a week out of your life in August, the second week of August, to detoxify, de-stress, to have a different perspective on life, to really look at gourmet. In fact, yesterday afternoon for 3 hours, I selected all the original beautiful presentation dishes that we're going to be sharing, and I had my chefs there saying, this is what I want you to prepare, gluten-free, a lot of living foods. And we're going to do it differently. I've never done this at a retreat before. Out of 400 retreats, I'm going to serve you the way the Europeans do, one course at a time. So it's no piling a lot of good food on a plate and stuffing yourself. It's one course at a time, so expect to take an hour and a half to have lunch. Plus, I'm making the dessert, the allergy-free, gluten-free, sugar-free dessert for the evening. And there are going to be lectures. I do the lectures every night. There's going to be artist healing classes, yoga, meditation, workouts in the gym, the aerobic water, the mineral baths, so much, more than any other place on the planet. But at the end of the day, it's people's experiences. Here are some unedited, just straight out of their mouth on the last day they were there, some people who were at the last retreat 3 months ago. Here's what they had to say about their experience.
And I have just finished a two-week stay at Gary's retreat, and I can't really say what this has meant to me because I don't even know yet, but I know that it's totally turned my life around. It's been the most incredible experience of my life for a lot of reasons. I came down here as a stage 4 cancer patient ready to go into hospice. And I'm walking out of here, literally walking without a cane, without anything to help me, and feeling better than I felt in a year, 3 years. And I'm so grateful, so incredibly grateful that I've had this time to reevaluate a lot of things in my life. I literally was unable to walk without some type of aid when I came here. And within 3 days, I'd put the cane down and I was walking and sort of power walking, nothing like what they do down here, but I was doing it in the best way that I could. So I cannot say enough, and I don't even expect people to believe what I'm saying because it seems so phenomenal that I would have a breast tumor that would go down almost 2/3 while I'm here because of the attention, because of the energy, because of everything here. I go home a different person, literally go home a different person. So I can only say thank you to everyone here, to all the people that have played a role in this. I sort of came here against my better judgment, not believing that anything could really make that much of a difference. And knowing that if I had 2 months left to live, that at least maybe Gary Null could help me make the best of those 2 months. And I go back fully charged and ready to go to work and continue where I left off 3 years ago. I was a registered nurse for 40 years. And one of the things that I did was I was a certified chemo nurse, chemotherapy nurse, and worked a lot in heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant. But my belief in chemotherapy was that all my patients that had had chemotherapy were dead, and I was not going to take it. So I went the natural route. I had 3 breast tumors initially 3 years ago that metastasized into bone cancer, liver cancer, and spinal cancer. And at this point, I don't feel that there is any pain there like I was having. I was having excruciating bone pain for which I was taking narcotics for. And now that is gone. And so I am just blessed to have been given this opportunity and every person here that has made this happen. I only wish I could make it happen for other people so they can benefit from this also.
Hi, my name is William, and I came down to Gary's retreat feeling stressed. I guess some of the normal general problems everybody has, and trying to get kind of back on track. And all I can say is what a wonderful atmosphere to de-stress. I feel like I've been helped immensely. It's just made a good impact on me, validated some things I wasn't sure about. Coincidentally, I have a mass or tumor on my back, and I didn't really come down here for that, and I had some energy work done, and I can't believe it. It seems like it's gone down at least one half, and I know that sounds unbelievable, but it's unbelievable to me also. And I don't know, it's just very informative, very positive. I feel very invigorated, I'm just so glad I came, really. I had no idea it was going to be like this and I was going to feel like this.
My name is Gemma, and I have been a natural health care practitioner for over 30 years. I came here because this is a time in my life for a new beginning for me. And this was the very best decision I could ever make. Everyone on the staff is supportive and loving and very constructive. The environment is so balanced and loving and nurturing. And through Gary's guidance, I learned to go in and allow nature to heal me. And I'm just very grateful for this opportunity. Everything is just so lovely and pristine and balanced. But I'm taking much with me, and I know that I'm capable of a new beginning in my life.
Hi, my name is Elaine, and I'm finishing off a week at Gary Noll's beautiful retreat. And I have to say, it is one of the best things I've ever done in my life. The energy is amazing, and it's a place where you can really work on every aspect, your emotional, your spiritual, your health, your well-being. Everyone here is so supportive and loving, and I don't know, I just think I'm vibrating in a whole different energy now. I can go deeper into my meditations. I feel much lighter and much more energetic than when I came here, and I consider myself in fairly good physical condition. I think I'm on the path of taking care of myself, and I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to come here. It's just a blissful experience. You can't really describe how you feel. Just the whole place is just filled with this fabulous energy, and just walking the terrain is amazing, and then having the wonderful nutrition that he provides. I mean, as I say, I feel like I've accomplished something for my body, mind, and spirit, and I'm grateful to have been here.
Hello, my name is Barbara, and I was raised by Irish immigrant parents that grew up on small farms in Ireland. And my husband was raised the same way. And the reason I'm saying that is because we learned to eat healthy, and we always did. And the thing was that we worked so hard. And then I started taking care of my mother and my aunt and my uncle until they passed away, and my job seemed to be taking care of people. So to all those people out there who take care of people, just know that you can come to a place and just completely relax and enjoy it. My husband, the reason why I came here was because my husband developed mild Parkinson's. It is absolutely spectacular here. I was thrilled when I saw everything. It is absolutely spectacular. We have absolutely fantastic food. The food and the preparation of the food and the staff that makes the food are so loving and so kind. And everybody here showed us so much love and kindness. And that's exactly what we needed while we were here. My husband is getting stronger and stronger all the time. And he's now on the road to recovery because he's starting to walk a little, take steps a bit bigger. And he's also starting to hold himself a little better. And we're going to keep up the good eating, and we're going to keep up our calmness. So now I'm completely relaxed, and it's the first time in many, many years that I can say I'm relaxed. Thank you, Gary.
My name is Sherry, and Gary has saved my life, really.
Hi, my name is Andrea, and I have to say I'm truly been blessed being here. I mean, it has truly been an experience for me, It's not just about living the healthy lifestyle, which has been a journey for me probably over 20 years now, but it's understanding that the energy we portray, good or bad, affects not only us, but the people around us. And I just want to say it's been truly, truly an experience being here, just getting more in tune with nature, understanding that there is a whole environment here that it's so clean. You can tell the difference in terms of the way you breathe versus when I'm in New York City. It's so, such a different experience. You connect with yourself. You learn to connect more with who you are. You have quiet time, something we don't always experience anyway when we're in the city. But this is what happens when you come on a retreat such as this. So I just want to thank Gary Null for all that he has done for all of us and the staff who have been just outstanding. And I would encourage anyone who's looking for a different type of vacation, this is one that you will truly, truly enjoy and come away learning more than you can ever imagine.
Those were just some of the individuals who attended last time. And because of that, we were able to pay BAI's bills. And that helped the station. We're going to do it again. We're going to pay some bills. My office will pay the bills. We didn't create the bills, but in a time of crisis, in a time of need, you don't make judgments against a station or its management or its programming. You simply say, unless we want this station to go off the air, we all have to contribute. So we're doing what we can, and this retreat is just one of the ways we can do it. If you want to join me, there's a limited room. And by the way, I never talk about disease there. This is not about treating any disease. The fact that some people are able to have improvements in their overall well-being, I don't take any credit for that. That's them. You can join us and hopefully change your life. 631-504-6198 is the number to call. 631-504-6198. For people who want to detoxify, de-stress, relax, invigorate, rejuvenate, be happy, smile, and be with nature, that's what we can provide. Great, best food you're going to eat in the world. And no negativity. By the way, I'm on zero tolerance for negativity. If people are hostile, negative, angry, blaming, I just put them on a plane and send them home. So if that's your nature, don't come. We had three people last time. That was their nature. They were not. They came with anger. They left with anger. But look at all the people who came with an open mind and accepted the environment and the classes and the workshops and nature and the animals. So be a part of those people who want to be open, vulnerable, and change. Call 631-504-6198. To our stations around the world, we're going to run a little long today because my guest is just on board and helping the station that I didn't know I'd be doing today until this communication with our station manager at BAI this morning, where I'm going to include some of the BAI audience, which I was not going to, but now I will in the second week because we're full the first week. I didn't want to keep Professor Henry Giroux to a short segment, so I'm at a normal time that you would have to sign off, we understand. But for those of you who are listening over the internet, PRN.FM, or want to go to the archives later, you can hear the full interview. With that said, let's go to Hamilton, Ontario, where Professor Henry Giroux, G-I-R-O-U-X, who holds the Global Television Network's Chair of English and Cultural Studies at McMaster's University in Ontario, Canada. He was previously the Waterbury Chair Professor at Penn State University and Director of the Forum in Education and Culture Studies. And he is a leader in the field known as critical thought. And he has a lot of books out, including The Violence of Organized Forgetting, Thinking Beyond America's Disimagination Machine. His website is henrygiroux.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Yes, hi.
Are you on a Skype or a regular telephone?
I'm on Skype.
Okay. We may have to... Let's see how this goes, because I want people to be able to hear what you have to say, and sometimes you got to be up close on Skype for it to really be audible. In any case, I don't know if you happen to have seen a joint study that was published a week or two ago by Princeton and Northwestern universities that concluded that there is no reason or sound evidence any longer to define the United States as democracy. Rather, in their analysis, the United States can officially be described as an oligarchy. And I feel a strong case can be made for it being either a police state or a postmodern form of totalitarianism, such as Sheldon Wolin and John Ralston Saul suggest. And one major impediment for the public to foment any kind of constructive change to restore public democracy will be the need to get rid of the illusions that they are participating in a democracy and begin to really see the nation for what it is. And unfortunately, there are layers upon layers of obstacles preventing the average person from discerning this, especially from our mainstream media and even the alternative media and even Pacifica Media, which has censored programs, though it hypocritically calls itself free speech radio. If you're not a part of its clique, its ideology, you're excluded. Well, our corporatized educational system and the government's false propaganda and deceptions to mislead the public are rampant. And when I look at your recent work, I'm particularly intrigued by the title of a recent book, The Violence of Organized Forgetting. Five words that say so much, and I believe that can help people understand the mechanisms and apparatus the government and elite have put into place to assure that democracy remains only a ritual, a pageantry, without any substance and to keep the public ignorant. So please begin by describing how the system has become a new kind of authoritarianism that is organized with the goal to keep people in a state of forgetfulness about what really matters to sustain the values of a real democracy, and why is this a violent act? And the second, what are some of the more important means, particularly with creating a governing and policing machine of lockdown and surveillance and attacking all dissidents that government industry are employing together to achieve their goals? The forum is yours.
Yeah, can you hear me, Gary?
Let's go ahead and let's see if it's audible.
Okay, I mean, for me, these are two very important questions, and I think that one of the ways in which the government snuffs out both questions of dissent and questions of critique is that it really has taken over almost all the cultural apparatuses that we define as producing a range of ideas, a range of values, a range of social relationships. In other words, it engages in a kind of public pedagogy that basically not only distorts information, but so narrows the possibility for people to be able to think about it, because it sort of rests on a spectacle of both violence and a spectacle of stupidity, that in a sense, there are very few outlets where people can now be educated in order to get the tools that they need to be able to address the kind of authoritarianism in which they find themselves. I mean, the mainstream media controls the media. The financial elite control the media. But they're also trying to control the schools, particularly higher education. Public education is relatively gone, as far as I'm concerned. They've ruined that. But I think that now that the attack is on higher education, we've got to raise questions about the educative nature of politics itself and what that means, and to recognize that there is no politics without attempting to change the way people think, that in some way develop a sense of identification based on matters of belief and persuasion, in which people can see themselves and recognize themselves in a whole range of new forms of domination that we have seen emerge very intensely since the 1980s.
If we view the United States today only in terms of a land for the benefit of a ruling oligarchy, then that infers that the rest of us are basically disposable creatures. And we've seen this both at home and abroad. Innocent citizens and children killed by Obama's drone strikes. Today, Saudi Arabia, one of our chief supporters that engages in massive crimes against humanity and women, one of their drones or one of their planes killed, I think, 34 innocent civilians. We won't care about that in the United States. The media will not play on that. And so what we're seeing is that most people are considered disposable victims. How do we get into that position? And well, search and seizures, debt prisons, kidnappings of children by child welfare agencies, the victims of Katrina and Sandy are all disposable. They are unfortunate casualties at best, but don't contribute anything necessarily to oligarchical rule and to the preservation of elitist control. So please speak, Henry, of how the organized violence that is now part of our system of governance and control has made everyone outside that system basically disposable.
I mean, I think there are two issues here. One is that what we need to recognize is that the social state, for all intent and purposes, is being entirely dismantled. So that the state now takes on a very different function. Instead of making a social investment in infrastructure and people's needs and so forth and so on, you now have a state that's really ruled by extremists. And what it's done, as the social state sort of is eliminated, the punishing state gains more strength. I mean, the state now functions in two ways. It does everything it can to aid the financial elite, and it does everything it can to destroy those public spheres where any kind of adequate sort of dialogue or thoughtfulness could take place that could possibly create the formative culture for producing new social movements. So I think in that sense, you have what we might call widespread forms of oppression based on matters of belief, based on matters of education, and based on matters of identification. Secondly, again, you have a militarizing state. I mean, the state not only acts in the name of Huxley, it acts in the name of Orwell. I mean, it's a surveillance state. It's a state that has legalized lawlessness, which means that, you know, just as you said, Gary, you know, as Obama, he has a kill list. You have the National Defense Authorization Act. Anybody can be kidnapped and taken off the streets and put in a ship off the coast, off of New York. You have drone killings, indiscriminate killings by drones. And I think that what this all basically adds up to is that we don't live in an oligarchy. We live in an authoritarian state. We have lost those vestiges of democracy. I mean, for all intent and purposes, I mean, this is now a police state. And you see it not only in the forms of brutality being waged against black youth and black men and others, you also see it in the way in which all vestiges and fundamentals of democracy are being attacked in very profoundly important ways. And so what is new, particularly, is this. Power is now separate from politics. Power is global and politics is local. And so we have no means at this point of being able to control these global financial elites who don't care about anything. They don't make political concessions. They don't care about the New Deal. They don't care about what happened with the Great Society, except to eliminate any vestiges of those reform movements. So you really have this elite that is relatively new, incredibly powerful, and very rich. And I think the question now becomes, how do you now break this consensus that they've created about themselves, that neoliberalism is the only alternative, there's no other alternative, government is terrible except when it helps the rich, that all those populations that are not basically plugged into market values and exchange values and consumerism are now disposable because they represent long-term investments. This country doesn't make long-term investments anymore. It makes short-term investments because it's based on the assumption that all that matters is a quick profit. And so I guess what we have seen since the marriage of Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, what we have seen is a system that is so ruthless in its willingness to make money, so ruthless in its willingness to concentrate power, that basically we have what I call a soft form of authoritarianism. We don't have boots in the streets. We just have a corporate media that controls almost everything that people say. We have a surveillance state, and we have a mass incarceration state. So, you know, if schools are now modeled after prisons, what we now have is a system in which one out of every 38 people is in some way involved with the criminal justice system. So, you know, it's easy to plot out the lines. I mean, unfortunately, the mainstream media never makes these quite visible.
I want to follow up on what you just said, because I'd like to hear your comments about the growing racial divide that is underway in the United States. And again, our media doesn't report the facts and keeps the public confused with the myth that people of color, both Latino and African Americans, are more violent, and that is the reason why there's so much police violence and killing of African Americans and Latino. It doesn't report that the murder rates by whites and blacks are about equal, 48% and 49% respectively, or that drug use is higher among whites, even though an African American is more likely to be incarcerated for drug possession. So in your estimation, is it simply chance that this wave of African Americans being tasered, killed, how the media reports on a group of blacks going to the streets to protest, and it's always as if these people represent a threat to the stability of America, and yet we are not looking at the people who are torturing and killing these people? They almost always get off. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I think that what you have is you have a system of domestic terrorism that's racially inspired. I mean, you have a system in which, for the most part, You know, the only thing that it can really do is to criminalize social behavior. It doesn't do anything else. And I think that what it does is it attacks the most vulnerable and those minorities of class and race that really don't have the resources to strike back. I mean, when you think about this, I mean, you know, most of the people who are now in jail in the United States are people of color. 70% are people of color. When you look at the incarceration rates, 2.2 million people, mostly of color. When you look at the way police discriminate against blacks by putting them in jail over as a result of the most meaningless sort of interactions, you begin to see that race is not just fundamental; it's also a target. You know, these repressive institutions, whether we're talking about the police or the criminal justice system, really equate blackness with the culture of criminality. And that's not a sweeping exaggeration. All you have to do is go back and look at the statistics around police violence, and you get a very clear idea of what that means, whether we're talking about stop and frisk, whether we're talking about outright killings of people for selling cigarettes on the street, or whether we're talking about handcuffing young black kids and putting them into the prison, the school-to-prison pipeline. So all the indications are there that violence is now the DNA of American society.
And all right, hold that thought, because I still want to talk to you about targeting intellectuals, which is the next big thing, in our educational system. For those of you who have to say goodbye listening right now, you're listening to Professor Henry Giroux, and his website is Henry A. Giroux, GIROUX.com, his book, The Violence of Organized Forgetting. Let me also suggest that this will be archived for the longer interview I'm going to continue in a moment with. And for those of you living in Woodstock, I'll be up there this Saturday, June 20th, 7 p.m., to screen, with a question-answer afterwards, my new feature film, Saving the Planet. It is a fundraiser for Woodstock 104 FM radio. That's WIOF 104.1, and it'll be at the Mountain View Studio at 20 Mountain View Avenue, Woodstock, New York, left off Rock City Road, north of Village Green. It's a suggested donation of $20. No one will be turned away, and you'll all receive one copy of the film itself. I'll be there. Look forward to seeing you there. Now, back to Henry Giroux. Henry, one of the characteristics of every totalitarian state is the targeting of independent thinking intellectuals. Stalin, Mao, Hitler, Pol Pot, they've all done it. Chris Hedges was on this program earlier this week to speak about the moral imperative of social dissent and rebellion we are facing in social political revolutions against a tyrannical oligarchy are not just peasant uprisings. And there have usually been deep critical thinkers with a moral imperative and intellectuals to frame the revolt in ethical terms and as an expression of the higher human spirit and human values. And when we look at the halls of government, especially in Congress, we're not seeing deep thinkers or people with philosophical minds tackling national and international problems with wisdom. Rather, it is mostly a very mediocre lot of opportunists, high-level achievers, technocrats, autocrats, with very little spiritual moral bearing, the so-called best and brightest out of the Ivy League schools, who are careerists and opportunists. And what is occurring today to silence the intellectual voices who speak out against the establishment, yourself included? What are the means being used by the government, education, and media to marginalize them, to lessen their influence on the larger population? And finally, why is this so dangerous for the future of the country and the future of the younger generation?
You know, Hannah Arendt once said that if you don't have a formative culture that enables people to think critically, you can't have a democracy. And I think that what we need to recognize is that, you know, if you go back to the 1960s when education was under siege by the left, I mean, it was really making clear that education was not a democratic project in the United States. The right never forgot this. I mean, the counter-revolution that we now find ourselves in is in part a counter-revolution not simply against democracy, but against the very structures that make it possible, both structurally, economically, and ideologically. And I think that this war that these... By the way, you claim... My feeling is that your description of the people who, in Congress is too moderate for me. I mean, these are extremists. These are not people who are simply confused or people who have other interests at heart. These are hardcore extremists who really believe that thinking, critical thinking, is dangerous. And they will do everything they can to make sure that they can eliminate it. I mean, all you have to do is look at Scott Walker in Wisconsin, who now just abolished tenure. And, you know, among, in Florida, you know, you look at a governor who basically rewrote, is rewriting the rules for what counts as a legitimate subject in higher education, claiming that he would like to see a system where tuition would be lowered for people who take business courses or courses that have a direct influence on the economy, whereas the humanities, the social sciences, the liberal arts, if you take those courses, then you're going to pay a higher tuition. And I think that in the name of austerity and in the name of economic progress, what you really see here happening is just a downright unchecked attempt to eliminate not just simply individual dissenters like Chris Hedges, but also the very institutions that produce them. And that's a far more pernicious attack on dissent. I mean, if there are no public spheres left where people can think about anything outside of consumerism, you know, we're in trouble. We're in trouble because we're suffering from a crisis, not just simply of memory, but suffering from a crisis of agency. And if the institutions are not in place that produce the possibility for critical agency and social responsibility and engaged citizenship, well, that seals the deal. Yeah, in the sense that authoritarianism now has this kind of both material and symbolic lock on people in terms of what they can say and what they can think and how they can act. Very dangerous. Remember, Arendt said thoughtlessness is the essence of fascism, the essence of totalitarianism. And in my estimation, she was exactly right.
I'd like to share just a final thought before we close our show, and that is, I do not believe that Americans, by and large, are in enough pain to give up their illusions, and they're still allowing themselves to be manipulated. And our educational system is now a part of that. Some of the most prestigious universities, such as Yale and Harvard, have been co-opted by private industry interest, and universities used to be the citadels of critical thinking and the positive radicalization of thought and ideas. In many respects, higher education served as a kind of social checks and balances to challenge the ethics and morals of government and private actions. And I believe that now we have a different model being rammed down students' throats, contributing to this violence of organized forgetfulness. And I believe that only by, as you suggest, the going to where the people who care about life, care about ethics, care about morality, and are coming from a spiritual perspective can be a part of the change by disengaging themselves from that grid. And you do a brilliant job in laying this out in The Violence of Organized Forgetting, Thinking Beyond America's Disimagination Machine. Thank you very much, Henry, for being with us today.
All right, thank you.
Henry, Professor Henry Giroux, one of the most important critical thinkers of our time. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
I only meant to love you. Didn't you know it, babe? Didn't you know it? Why couldn't you be content with the love I gave? I gave you my heart, but you wanted my mind. Oh, yeah. Your love scared me to death, girl. Oh, it's a choking kind. That's all it is.